Hungarian author Noemi Seggi sympathizes with these migrants. In a recent op-ed for the New York Times, she wrote, "Migrants don't want to be stuck here, where we Hungarians are destined to live our shabby little lives." I know it sounds gloomy, but Seggi says that's the Hungarian psyche.
I think it's a depressive country, I have to say. I think it's a fact that Hungary has always had a very high suicide rate. So it's a very, very frustrating place. As a Hungarian, I can tell that it's not easy to live here because we are very gloomy people.
Is it gloomy because is it sort of dashed expectations, or is it national character, or is it sort of persistent? Unsatisfying economy and inability to realize dreams?
Well, I think it's a long story, but we are frustrated because we are constant losers in politics, I guess. We have a long history of being the losers. So I guess maybe this is why we have this kind of historical frustration in us.
You write in your piece, "Eastern Europe is not the all-inclusive luxury hotel that many in the other half of the continent enjoy. We're more at the low-budget, self-catering end of the market." Is that how it feels in a place like Hungary?
Well, Hungary is not a place where you would like to live. And if you see the people coming here, they want to go on as soon as possible because it has no good image in the international scene.
What's interesting is these images that have come out of Hungary are pretty tough. You know, the sort of overcrowded kind of camps that refugees and migrants are being put into, the camera woman who trips the refugees, and it's a whole lot of negativity. Is there a sense among Hungarians that they really want to combat that image, that they really want people to know, no, we're good people, that isn't us?
I think that people are very sad because of that, because I think that you shouldn't identify the government with the people. I can say that Hungarian people are really very charitable. So, for example, today I have heard that Migration Aid, which is a charity organization working at the Keleti railway station, ordered the donation stop, because they have so huge amount of donations that they cannot store it. So I think that people in the country are really ready to help.
What would you like to see happen in Hungary regarding the refugees and migrants who are already there?
Well, that's a hard question because I don't know what is the good solution in this situation. So I just would like to see what can be done.
That was Hungarian author Noemi Seggi. Much has been made about how Eastern and Western Europe are responding to the refugee crisis in dramatically different ways. Western nations are often portrayed as offering a helping hand, while Eastern European countries are seen as more resistant.
I'm actually now getting tired of this Eastern Europe is one thing and Western Europe is another. It's not exactly an Eastern-Western divide.
That's Anne Applebaum. She's the author of Iron Curtain, The Crushing of Eastern Europe, 1944 to 1956.
There are a lot of cliches being pushed around about Eastern Europe and what's Eastern Europe like, what's Western Europe like. Actually, the Danes have been very clear that they don't want any refugees, and they're not at all keen to expand the numbers in their country. The Dutch have been very quiet. They have a very large refugee and immigrant population, which is now the source of an enormous amount of political strife inside the country. I mean, as I said, this refugee issue actually divides Western Europe and divides Eastern Europe as it divides all of Europe.
I think what jumps out is kind of more the rich country, poor country, or not entirely poor, but the sort of ability of certain Western European countries to absorb based on a stronger economy. And Eastern European countries kind of saying, look, we're still trying to get our act together and create a strong economy. We can't handle this.
There are people in Eastern Europe who will look at the refugees who have cell phones and are wearing Adidas and think, well, they look wealthier, or they look not that much different from me. So, there is that. It's not quite rich poor. It's to do with the sense that, that countries have of their own ability to absorb people. You know, the Poles, the Hungarians, the Czechs, the Slovaks, they feel we're not able to absorb these populations because, you know, we've never done it before. We don't have the facilities. We don't have the teachers to teach them our languages. We, you know, we don't know if they'll want to stay here anyway. So I think that's really the most important difference.
But there are fairly stark differences if you compare the wealthier countries of Western Europe to places like, you know, Hungary and the Balkans and other places in terms of their interest in taking in refugees and migrants. There's different histories in terms of this has been going on in Western Europe for a long time, and the really different post-World War II histories have had sort of an impact on how they see refugees and migrants, don't you think?
It's true there is one big difference, which is that the Eastern Europeans did not have an influx of specifically Muslim immigrants into their countries at all after the Second World War. And Britain, France, and Germany, also Italy and Spain did. And the Eastern Europeans who've been seeing news stories about Muslim atrocities in Europe, in Paris, in Spain, have developed a sense, you know, well, at least we don't have that problem. And also, we aren't capable of dealing with that problem. We don't know how to do it. We wouldn't know how to absorb people like that. But I would also be cautious about the division, because actually Britain has been very cautious about Syrian refugees, as has Denmark. Both have been very clear that they don't agree with Merkel's policy of opening the doors. Both have used very different kinds of language.
What about the argument that France, Britain, and Germany had colonies, and a lot of the former communist states don't have that history, so they don't have that kind of, oh, we've got to give back, we've got to help out mentality?
That's absolutely true. That is also part of the story. They didn't have colonies. They didn't have the same kinds of contacts and relationship with that kind of part of the world. They don't have the same guilt that some in Western Europe have about that part of the world, and they don't have the same kinds of economic connections.
Now, you've written pretty harshly about Europe's lack of a cohesive response. Do you think that there is any opportunity for all of Europe to get together on this refugee and migrant crisis?
There's a deeper problem in Europe, which is that Europe doesn't have a coherent way of thinking about defense and strategy and foreign policy at all. And in reality, this crisis, this refugee crisis, is the product of the Syrian war and of the fighting in Iraq and across the Middle East. And Europe has had no policy towards the region, no coherent policy towards the region at all. And that's because Europe doesn't have foreign policy making mechanisms, because attempts to set those up have been successfully torpedoed by the larger countries, which wanted to have their own foreign policies. And so there isn't a cohesive mechanism or a cohesive way to think about it. This is one of the results of that failure.
Anne Applebaum is the author of Iron Curtain, The Crushing of Eastern Europe, 1944 to 1956. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.